Hi people, and hello my Chili Con Carne crew. It is Chili here for an episode of Retro Reviews. And of course you read that title right. This is part one of the Pink Floyd ranking list, because there are a lot of albums to go through, and I'm not just going to be tackling Pink Floyd, I'm also going to go over all the solo stuff. We're going to discuss Roger Waters, Rick Wright, of course David Gilmour, and even Syd Barrett. So, let's get into part one. So, to begin off with the bottom of the barrel, we're going to be discussing the worst of the worst albums, and we're going to begin with the latest entry. This is Roger Waters' Dark Side of the Moon Redux. For me, this is just the bottom of the barrel. I don't want to listen to this album. I've done a whole review on it, people. You can go and watch that review to hear my thoughts on that album, because it is horrendous. It is absolutely woeful. Why, oh why, would Roger revisit this? Well, it's Roger's decision, I guess. He can do what he wants. But why would he do so? Because he's really just blemished his, creativity, his idea of Dark Side of the Moon. It was an interesting concept. It was a flawed, method of pulling this thing off. It really was. So, yeah, I am just going to leave it at that and just say Dark Side of the Moon Redux, do not listen to, do not go back to it. There is no point. I listened to that album for 2 days, and that was 2 days too long. So, yeah, for me, bottom of the barrel. I'm sure that'll get a lot of people pissed off, but hey, this is my list. So next up, we're going to be talking about pretty much all of Roger Waters' soundtracks. I'm only ranking them so low, not because I hate Roger Waters. On the contrary, I think he's a really good musician. But it's purely because I haven't really listened to him. And if that's the case, I will put them here. I did listen to, one of the albums, one from his 70s. I forget what it's called, The Human Body or something like that. It was terrible. It really was. Weird experimental shit, I guess. But it just is, it's crap. I mean, Roger Waters, as far as the psychedelic aspects of it, was not the best person for portraying that. And yeah, of course, the 70s soundtrack album, The Human Body, may not be the best representation of his works. There may be soundtracks of his that are flawless and amazing. I just haven't explored them. And I don't really care to be honest. So yeah, I'm going to put all of his stuff, for soundtracks right here. I don't care. The next up on my list is going to be Syd Barrett's album Barrett, his second and his last effort. I just don't like this album, if I'm being perfectly honest. I don't know, there's something about it. I listened to a few tracks and just went, this isn't for me. It's not my style. At least with his first album, it was a bit more interesting, I guess. This one was, you can see why it would be his last album, I guess. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. So this was his last album, unfortunately, until his demise in, when was it, 2000 and, I want to say 6, 2008. Someone comment below and tell me the truth there. But still, anyway, Barrett album, not that good. So it gets this part of the list. Next up on my list is going to be Syd Barrett's first solo album, The Madcap Laughs. I remember a friend showed me this album, and there were some interesting bits, I'll admit, but he was more into the 60s psychedelic kind of sounds than I was. I certainly wasn't into that. I've never really been into that type of music. It's a shame. It's interesting, I guess. Why would you like Pink Floyd otherwise? But not all, of course, of Pink Floyd stuff was that. While Syd Barrett was in the band, they did venture and do that whole scene, but I'm going to be honest and say I do not like Syd Barrett era Pink Floyd. It's just not that good to me. It's a different time of the band's career before they evolved and changed their style. And for me, when they evolved, they became infinitely much better. And of course, most people would agree with me. I know there's a hardcore fan base from the 60s that absolutely love that era. Nick Mason tours and performs a lot of music from that era too. And that comes up a little bit later on. But still, The Madcap Laughs is just not an interesting one. I know that there was some kind of music publicist that said when Syd Barrett got, fired or whatever from the band, that they would just not survive, they being Pink Floyd. And Syd Barrett was the main one to watch out for. How very wrong they were. But I guess that's, of course, due to underlying mental issues and drug paraphernalia, drug use and all the rest. So that is a different cookie. But still, you know what, Madcap Laughs had some interesting parts. It just wasn't that good of an album, though. You know, yeah, one or two tracks here or there. It's not going to save it, though, from what is essentially a self-described album, The Madcap Laughs. Next up on my list, it's the first Pink Floyd entry, and perhaps to no one's real surprise, or maybe a few at least, the first one for me is going to be Obscured by Clouds. This was a soundtrack, the second soundtrack album that they did, and thankfully the last, because, you know, Obscured by Clouds is just a terrible album. It really is. I don't care what people have to say, you cannot change my mind. You know, What's the Deal is an interesting track, sure. But outside of that, you know, Mudman, Free Fall, you know, but that is it. There's nothing else going for this. I never go back to it. The album cover is abysmal. What is this out of focus camera work here? I don't know. But, you know, you're looking over this and it's just such a terrible Pink Floyd album, especially around about this time in the band's career. You know, they are just really on the verge of doing great things, and of course they do this. It makes my blood boil, the fact that this is in between two of their best works, I guess, giving away answers. But still, you know, Obscured by Clouds is to me the Pink Floyd's worst album to date, or now ever. So yes, for me, Obscured by Clouds, people, this is where it sits. The next one on the list, again another Pink Floyd entry, is going to be the Pink Floyd album More, soundtrack album. And thankfully, there is just no more on the list for soundtracks. That's it, we're done. You know, More is a movie I've never seen and I never will, and considering this soundtrack, I have no intention of viewing it. There's just nothing. The Nile song is the only redeeming track for this. Outside of that, who cares about some of these songs here, which go for like a minute long here or 2 minutes there? A Spanish piece. Wow, fantastic. I really just wanted to hear David Gilmour playing a little bit of Spanish guitar for a couple of seconds. I don't care. I really do not care. But yes, the Nile song, only redeeming part of this album for me. People will say maybe green is the colour. No, the Nile song. That's the only one. Play that song and that's it. That's the only song you need from More. Odd cover. That's probably all I'm going to say about that. The colouring, just weird. Just with the style, people. What can we say? We're talking about Pink Floyd in the 69, so... yes. Next up on my list is going to be the Pink Floyd album, A Saucerful of Secrets. This is the only album, I'm pretty sure, with David Gilmour and Syd Barrett on them. And... it's shocking. It's an interesting concept. Like, yeah, let's get David Gilmour on and Syd Barrett. It seems like an interesting idea, but we are talking about early Gilmour and late era Syd Barrett when he's so affected he can't play. So it's unfortunate. You know, the album artwork reflects the vision that you're going to be hearing on this album. It's extremely space rock. You know, Pink Floyd has kind of changed its sound a little bit from their previous album and gone into the whole Hawkwind era, you know, and Hawkwind's as far as I go when it comes to space rock. If you want to give me that psychedelic space rock sounds, I want to hear it in stoner metal. That is where I want to hear that kind of space rock sound, you know. I don't want to hear it in the 60s era stuff. Even Hawkwind, you know, I mean, I don't mind a bit of their, you know, early stuff, I suppose, but space rock is a bit of an odd ball. It's such a weird era of music. You're going past the 60s psychedelic era and then going into this ambience, but with guitars. You know, as far as ambience goes, I don't mind it with guitars, but more modern stuff or electronic stuff. You know, this 60s era of ambience space rock is just, yuck. It's just the whole thing. That whole scene, I just do not like. You know, what is it? The Rolling Stones are kind of in there as well. I know they were definitely influenced on, you know, their Satanic Majesty's Service, whatever that album was, as well as the Beatles to a various degree. You know, they did fly close to the sun but without melting their wings, of course, with Sgt. Pepper. Pet Shop Boys, a whole bunch of those artists, you know, all of them, they were influenced by the whole London 67, 68, 69 scene that was, you know, was it Marquee Club or something? So, yeah, A Saucer Full of Secrets is just that era of Pink Floyd, you know, you're talking about 1968, when, oh, we're going to be doing these long kind of, they started doing more longer tracks. Of course, they did it on their first album with A Saucer Full of Secrets, but then there's like a bunch of acoustic-y pieces in there, which aren't too bad. Set the whole, Set the Controls to the Heart of the Sun is just, it's so airy and disappointing, I guess. I know a lot of people love it. You know, Juggling Blues is probably the track that stands out for me. Let There Be More Light, I know people enjoy that one too, and A Source of All Secrets, the title track. I do not like those tracks. I don't care for this album. I just don't. The album artwork is, I don't know, it's like having an epileptic fit in the corner over there. It's just disgusting. It is like this opaque green and brown of the time. It's like seeing an out-of-date kitchen. You know, when you see those kitchen design, you know, fails, and it's like, all right, people, here we go. We got to update this kitchen. This is the before photo, and show this logo here. This is A Saucer Full of Secrets, and this is after. Yeah, this is definitely the band. This is before they did that whole revival. So, yeah, everyone, A Saucer Full of Secrets. I just don't like this album. Sorry. This next entry is surely going to piss a lot of people off, but it's going to be Pink Floyd's album, The Final Cut. Yeah, this is The Wall Part 2. What Roger Waters achieved only a few years prior in perfection, I guess, of a storytelling narrative with The Wall is revisited on The Final Cut for some reason. It's almost the same thing, repeated, but just really dull, really boring. And there's just nothing going for it. I've never cared for this album. You know, a lot of people say, oh, this track or that track is actually pretty good. Two Suns in the Sunset was one that I think Josh pointed out, and I don't care for it, to be honest. Other people also say, you know, what is it? The Fletcher Memorial Home. I don't care for it either. You know, I didn't mind when the Tigers Break Free. I thought that was okay. But other than that, it's largely an unnecessary album that it's unfortunately the last one with Roger Waters. So, you know, it's like this tremendous highs that was the decade before ushered into the new decade. And unfortunately, the, you know, with Roger Waters leaving and this sour taste in the band with The Final Cut. So, you know, it's a whole drab affair of I don't care. And I don't really want to ever revisit this album. Sorry, this album just really sucks. And for me, that's why it's so low. I don't care. I think even their 60s stuff, even some of their stuff from the 60s is better. Next up is actually going to be two albums lumped into one, because I'm going to be talking about Richard Wright and both of his solo albums. We're going to be discussing Wet Dream and Broken China. Now, Richard Wright's material is something I haven't delved into deeply, to be honest. It was only after, you know, the Dark Side of the Moon Redux that I decided to revisit his works, because at the end of the day, I'm sorry to say, but even John Lord, who I love, I don't really want to go back and listen to his solo stuff, you know. And Richard definitely brought a lot of the jazz and psychedelic elements into their early points of their career, but piano heavy tunes, not my speed, unfortunately. So I'm going to lump both of these in here. The album that I did play a lot of, I guess, was, I think, not Broken China, Wet Dream. And I've got to do a shout out to at least two of the tracks here, because they were pretty decent, you know, with Cat Cruise and I think it was Summer Elegy or Waves. One of those two tracks there. Those sections, you know, were that part of the album, I should say. Those three tracks possibly brought a lot of really cool elements to it. Very different. You know, very different to any other solo album that the others have released. So I thought that was kind of cool. But still, I don't know, you know. And it's interesting, actually. It looks like Stephen Wilson even remixed part of this album, I think. Just clicking over this. Okay, seeing on Spotify here. It was remixed this year by Stephen Wilson. Again, prog rock legend, just goes into remix a whole bunch of albums. He does it all the time. Remaster, I should probably say. Not remix. Very big difference. So yeah, Stephen Wilson, everyone, fantastic musician to check out. He also did some works with Yes, remastering their early stuff. So, yeah, interesting to note that. I didn't know that, and that might have been the version that I even heard. But, yeah, I thought Cat Cruz is cool. But, you know, I haven't really gone deep into his other album there. So, yeah, I'm going to lump them here, unfortunately. Okay, so the following album that I'm going to be putting on my list, it's going to be the Pink Floyd album, the debut album, The Piper at the Gates of Dawn. Yes, the album that really started a whole movement, everyone. Pink Floyd's debut, psychedelic little trippy cover art there that you can see up in the corner. And interesting is a word. I remember the first time I played it, and that was probably the most vulnerable I was to that era of music. But even then, I still, this is probably about the fourth or fifth album that I had heard of theirs. Even back then, I just didn't like it. You know, Astronomy Demine is, yeah, that's a cool track when performed live. You know, along with a lot of other tracks here. Interstellar Overdrive is another one that everyone really points to and goes, oh, look at this amazing effort there. But it never caught my attention. You know, a lot of these songs here are just not really interesting. And even going over the counts compared to a lot of the other albums, this one's quite low. You know, might be a remastered version, maybe that's why. But, you know, Interstellar Overdrive at nearly 10 minutes was, it's okay. But again, I just prefer the live versions of these. They sound much better. These ones are, I'm not going to say overproduced. They're probably just a bit over the top. I guess that might be the right way of putting it. And then they've got the stupid tracks in there like Power Toke H. You know, Power Tokage, yeah, we fucking get it. You guys are on weed, whatever. Who cares? Lucifer Sam, I don't know why. Chapter 24, The Gnome. But all of this stuff, crap. You know, there is just a lot of crap on this album. And the fact that, I guess this was the pull at the time. I mean, here's an interesting one for you. If Pink Floyd disbanded right when Syd Barrett left the band, what would their mark, their legacy on music have been? They'd just be some other, you know, ill-forgotten band of the 60s in that era. Who knows? Alternative universe, you know. We need to get out of that era, I guess. But, you know, I'm just glad that this is the last of them, except for the next one, which is the last. But still, yeah, I just do not like this. I know this album also has a very big cult following. A lot of people really love this album, so I'm sure that me listening it so low is going to piss off a lot of people. But, again, this is just how I rank it. I just do not like this album, you know. And I will discuss at the very end of the episode of part two, the albums of the times and stuff like that for live recordings. So stay tuned for that. But in regards to it, yeah, I just pass. I just wouldn't really bother coming back to this. I never do. So yeah, you guessed this, the last of the 60s era albums. And surprisingly, it is up a bit higher on my list, and that's for only one reason, because the first half is live recordings of their early material, and they're better tracks, you know. If I want to hear a lot of early material from Pink Floyd, I prefer it in the early settings where they only played about six tracks, and I'm a gummer, everyone, I'm a gummer is like that. We have four live tracks. Oh my gosh, only four tracks. Thank you. And they are, of course, playing Astronomy Demine, Careful With That Axe, Eugene, a very underrated B-side, Set the Controls to the Heart of the Sun. Yeah, it's fine. And A Source of Full Secrets. Yeah, again, it's fine. But, like I said in the last one for Piper, anything that they perform live in this time is better. I just do not like the studio versions of the music. I don't know why. But, you know, the live recordings of Amagama is the only reason that this album is carried so high. If I were to exclude disc one, yeah, this would probably sit four more ranks below. It'd be a shocking album. It is horrific because disc two is Pink Floyd just going really weird and off the rails. You know, the band decided that they would just do their own thing and say, all right, everyone, you're going to get a side of the record and you're going to record your own material. And this went for weird shit. You know, you had the guitar section, the bass section, the recording of audios and the drummings and stuff like that. You had Sisyphus parts 1-4, Granchus and Meadows, The Narrow Way, which according to David Gilmour, he just made up and just didn't care. It was a really disjointed effort by the band, of course, in the Grand Visor's Garden Party. And then the longest track of Pink Floyd's albums ever. Several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a pick, and it's all shithouse. Avoid the second disc of Amagama, because it's terrible. So it's about this part in the rankings of the albums that I get to the first David Gilmour solo album, and this one is his 1984 release, About Face. For me, it's not that interesting. It's this kind of pop era, you know, David Gilmour going through that 80s thing. His post-Pink Floyd breakup, if you will. I mean, they had that slight, you know, that slight period where they broke up after Final Cut when Roger Waters left the band, and this would be just a few years before they would release their follow-up album, Momentary Lapse of Reason. So, you know, this is a okay album at best, I guess. It's otherwise, it's just pretty average. I think I read somewhere that even Phil Collins played drums on a couple of tracks. So it kind of gives you an idea that you've gone from like prog rock epics, like, you know, people feel funny about the term prog rock with Pink Floyd, but they are, you know, they've gone from this prog rockish kind of thing or epic storytelling to soft rock almost. It really is this polished 80s pop rock. It really, that's, I don't know how to say it. That's exactly how it is. Love on the Air, for example. I mean, it's danger close to that song of his, that Phil Collins wrote. What is that, Love in the Air or whatever? No, and it's just so uninteresting. I don't like this album. It's just so forgettable. There's nothing on here that exactly stands out, but it is a David Gilmour album, so he plays a few, you know, good licks, but other than that, I just don't find really many good tracks here. It's still remarkably better than most of his, you know, the 60s material of Pink Floyd or Syd Barrett, so that's why it's up higher, but still, it's an album that I just do not venture back to. Not often enough. And for good reason, for good merit, you know? So that's where it sits here. So, yeah, we're going to get into Atom Heart Mother on this part, and for me, this is where Pink Floyd is in a bridging phase, I guess, if you will. You know, they've come out of the 60s era. They're still deeply rooted, of course, in that, and it can be heard on various tracks on Atom Heart Mother, but it's also a band that's starting to do adventurous songs, very, very long songs that would become a staple almost for stuff moving forward. You know, you have the very first track, of course, the self-titled track, Atom Heart Mother, a 23 and a half minute epic, and it's just, okay, yeah, you know, you're following in those long tracks, you're doing, starting to anyway, but it's so weird, it's so eclectic, it's so firmly grounded in the psychedelic phase that I don't like it at all. And I love long songs. I love to hear long songs, you know. I think there's an adventure to be heard in most of these songs, to be for sure. But Atom Heart Mother is just not one to get lost in. Plus, it's also got, like, one of the worst Pink Floyd album covers ever. You know, just, okay, here's a giant cow. Okay, you know. Every album, actually interesting fact, but every album from this one onwards never featured the band again. Amagama was the last album to have the band on the front cover for studio albums, but moving on, Atom Heart Mother would never have the band on it again. Just an interesting fact that I found out later on, you know. So again, yes, Atom Heart Mother, not a really good track, not a strong one, but interesting, you know, takes up the first side of the record. And then it goes into these three acoustic-y pieces, like If, which isn't too bad, or Summer 68. That's a pretty cool track. I do love Fat Old Son. I think that's a really strong piece there. And, of course, then you've got Alex Psychedelic Breakfast. Yeah, it's okay, you know, if you took sections out. Same with Atom Heart Mother. I reckon you could roll off the first 6 minutes and start there, and then it starts to get interesting. But Atom Heart Mother is just this, you know, it's just this interesting bridge where you've gone from that 60s era, post Syd Barrett as well, of course, and they've gone, all right, we're adventuring, we're trying new things, and what would happen after this? This is where it all changes. This album right here, it's like, you know, they've got a path in the road, and they took that path that Pink Floyd would eventually go on to. You know, so it's an interesting one to, I guess, go back to check out every so often. I don't mind going back and checking this one out, but it's certainly not an album I play a lot. You know, it's okay, it's just not great. Not a phenomenal album of theirs, especially for the remainder of this list. And now we have the first entry by Roger Waters, if you exclude The Dark Side of the Moon and his soundtracks. So his first real solo album in the list here, with Radio Chaos. It's an album that is definitely not strong, you know, compared to the others that were in between. This one sandwiched, I think it kind of gets forgotten a lot, and it has a very boring cover. It has such a bland and boring cover. I don't like it at all, to be honest. You know, it's just a black green Morse code looking code thing. I don't know what it stands for there, but I'm not going to really be bothered going into that either. But you know, it's this album that's just got really bad production to it. It's of its era. It sounds like crap. Now, I don't think there's any tracks that really stood out, and it's fine as far as, you know, why it sits higher than the rest. It's better than, obviously, what has come before it. But I think it's a good reason why it sits as well so low. You know, as far as his solo work, it's definitely the most forgettable one that I've of his, Radio Chaos. I don't really recall any of the tracks looking over this. You know, who needs information? Radio Waves, yeah, all these songs here, I just don't recall. The Tide Is Turning, which is apparently a bonus track, I think, after Live Aid, it just says here. I don't remember this one. Maybe on a live record, actually. I can't right now recall it. But yeah, like, you know, if I'm going to go into Roger Waters solo material, there are definitely other ones that I'm going to jump into. Radio Chaos is not one of them. You know, when I did replay this little while back, I just really forgot everything about it. It's just so, I don't know. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I know a lot of people are Roger Waters fanatics and love his works, but I think there's a unison agreement there that Radio Chaos is not a strong album. So we have another David Gilmour entry with the Metallic Spheres, and I'm also going to include the Metallic Spheres with Colors on this one. It's another album that I actually forgot existed for a while, you know, until it was brought back to my attention when I was perusing David Gilmour's materials, because it came up as, you know, this new release of David Gilmour featuring The Orb, which that's what it is. It's, you know, a bunch of it's just David Gilmour playing guitar with The Orb performing electronic ambience in the background. And the original one was pretty okay. It's background music. I guess that would be the safe way to say it. But I thought that the Metallic Spheres in color was much, much better. A fine improvement. And that's because, I guess, you know, you've got two rather renowned musicians in the field with The Orb and David Gilmour, and they probably didn't want to, I guess, tread on each other's toes. I think that's perfectly sane for this record, in which sense they just don't really do anything adventurous. I think there could have been something with this if they weren't writing long songs, because at the end of the day, it's like two tracks just split up into two, and they're each like 20 minute long. So make of it what you will, I suppose, but I think it's still a fine effort by the band, and I do like, as I said, I do like long songs. And I do like, you know, ambient works. I think in the, you know, modern setting, they're much, much better. And The Orb certainly do good work. And I think this one is definitely a better album. And you'll see, of course, with the next one, I believe, that this follows the same narrative. But yeah, you know, it's an interesting one. If you haven't heard it, check it out. It's worthwhile. I would probably say In Colours more so than the original, but it also depends on how much you like electronic music. You know, do you like electronic music mixed in with David Gilmour solos? If you do, yeah, this might be something up your alley. If you don't at all, forget about it. You're not going to like this. So, yeah, I think it's still cool. It's an interesting adventure between two esteemed artists. So, yeah, I like it. It's all right. And of course, next up, we have The Endless River. And for the longest of time, something like almost three decades, we thought that we had heard everything there was from Pink Floyd. Until one day, there were these unreleased tapes that David Gilmour had made when he was on his, I think it was on his houseboat or something at the time. His little riverboat, I want to say. I think I'm remembering that right, we're saying that. And, you know, The Endless River was a bunch of recordings made around about at the same time that they were making The Division Bell. And Richard Wright, I think, was involved in a lot of these works as well. And what you have with The Endless River is just a bunch of songs, various ambient pieces. But it's a very beautiful album. I love this album. And I think it's got such an amazing album cover that you can see up there in the corner that I really love, and really I think that's the perfect picture for what the works envelop on this record. You know, a bunch of drawn out guitar solos. I don't think there's any lyrics, or if there is, there's very, very little. So what we have mostly on offer from Pink Floyd and co. is really these guitar pieces that are intricately ambient, I suppose. You know, it's David Gilmour and Richard Wright and co, of course, just doing these pieces that just don't have many lyrics within. Weird little jams, I suppose you could say. And it certainly drummed up a lot of interest at the time, I remember. It's a bunch of tracks here, you know, you got, so basically it's broken up into four sides. Side 1, 2, and 3, and 4. And various track names amongst them. There's even a few continuations, such as on Autumn 68, which is a continuation from Summer 68 from Adam Hart and Mother. And I think that was one of the few. There might be a few others that people are going, oh yeah, what about this one here, you know, and that might be the case, but that was the one that I just distinctly remember. And this is a really, I like this, it's a really cool album. You know, there's two or three tracks at the end, they're TBS 9 and 14, I guess, just playing around there. But this is a this is just an album I remember just playing over summer, having it in the background, and just chilling to. Because it's such an eclectically weird piece from Pink Floyd, this band, and I wasn't sure what to expect when they announced it at the time. You know, 2014 came around, oh yeah, there's this new album that Pink Floyd didn't release. And I'm like, what could it be? You know, this is interesting. We're going to get, like, B-sides. To a degree, it was. But what we got instead, I mean, it left me surprised. But in a good way, I would say. I like The Endless River. I know a lot of people really don't. But I really do like The Endless River for what it is. An interesting piece, kind of a time capsule. And it was released later on, you know, in the band's career. So yeah, I think this is recorded 20 years back. It was recorded back in like 93, 94 during the Division Bell recording sessions. And I think it's interesting, you know, to come back to. Might play it tonight. Who knows? Interesting story as well regarding The Endless River. I was away on holidays one time, and I was out on a beach, actually. And I was falling asleep on the side of a beach at, there was a tree as well. You know, I'm in the shade thinking, I'm a bit safe, I can, you know, have a quick snooze. And I was playing The Endless River, you know, sending me off to sleep. Anyway, needless to say, I fell completely asleep for about an hour or so. And by the time I woke up, it was, you know, the last track of The Endless River. But the shade that I was safe under had moved, and I don't know how long ago. And when I got up, I was incredibly burnt from my shoulders down to my back. And I actually got really bad blisters. So it required like silver nitrate and stuff like that, because a big blister formed on my shoulder. And they put, you know, this stuff that they use in burn victims. It was that bad. So, you know, really, it does that. The Endless River makes you fall asleep. It's a good album. Very relaxing album. If you've enjoyed this content, make sure to smash that like button, subscribe to us, and stay notified for future music-related content, because it keeps our manager happy at the end of the day. We are also on Discord, Instagram, Facebook, and all those other social platforms if you want to check us out. As always, people, you have a great day, and stay spicy.